Got the hat.
He's a company man.
Looks good. Looks good.
That's a company man right there. Grayson, we were talking ACC. Before we left out of here, we were talking Cal. I want to ask you some general ACC stuff today. You were present. You voted at ACC Media Day, or kickoff, rather, which it took 3 months to tabulate those results I guess we're doing them on pencil and paper. What stood out to you from the Media Day scrum and ensuing poll and award stuff yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was?
I think the reason it took so long is because they had to track down who voted Stanford for the first place vote.
That guy,
they wanted to make sure he never gets a credential again.
Whoever that guy is awesome.
Shout out to him. Like, I saw the one by Stanford. I was like, that can't be right. It's like you have all of the Miami first place votes. You got Clemson, SMU, and then Stanford's just casually there. Love the representation.
I liked the three Mike Norvell apologists, the three diehard Norvell guys.
It was strange, too, for me, because it sounds like based off of what we heard from ACC kickoff, Florida State wants them gone. So those are like the last remaining holdouts of Mike Norvell belief in Tallahassee.
You can at least see a small path, though, for Florida State.
I don't know.
It's tiny.
You've got to sell me, Ben. Were you one of the voters?
No. I mean, I'm not Stanford. That's like Spurrier voting for Duke every year back in the day. But Florida State, like, they have another season where everything goes right. Deuce Robinson just, you know, does what he's been doing his whole life. I mean,
it's a good, you know what? I'll give you this. It's a really good roster. I like the roster quite a bit. The schedule is tough, and their quarterback is Ashton Daniels, and that is where the problem kicks in. I think if you chuck Jordan Travis on this team,
it's pretty good.
They're probably competing for the ACC, but you have Ashton Daniels, and you have lame duck Mike Norvell.
The wheels will fall off. I could see a world where Florida State starts 3-1 or something, and they compete with Alabama, and you have a small contingent of people that are like, there could be a run. And then you're going to have the 7-26 game where Daniels is forced to be more of a thrower of the football, and he hasn't been proven capable to do so, and things just kind of fall apart. But I don't know what the standard is for them this year. What do they consider success? 7-8 wins? Something like that?
You bring up a great point about their schedule. It is tough. It's 7 or 8 wins, you're beating teams that you probably should not beat. But let me play along here.
Okay.
Okay.
You just played along with Cal, so I will play along with this.
Again, I'm not telling you this is going to happen. I'm just trying to show you where this path might lead. They beat SMU at home in week 2, mm-hmm. and then have a bye week. They already have pulled the upset. And then they go to Alabama.
That's tough.
But I maintain Alabama's going to be average as grits.
Okay.
Average or not, going to Tuscaloosa is a tough get. But what if, I mean, they've already pulled the upset once against Alabama. What if you win that one? Then you are looking at Florida State in an entirely different lens. Now, they're still going to have at Louisville, at Miami, Clemson at home, at Pitt, Florida. I mean, those are tough. I don't care who you are. But if I can get you to that point, then there's a path.
It's maybe Alabama will be tired at that point from their brutal SEC schedule.
They beat them last
from
year.
They
beat them
Florida
last year.
Florida State would be gassed from the post-game parties that would ensue.
That's right.
Last year, Florida State, I have them 7th or 8th, by the way. They're in this pocket where everybody's the same. Last year, they went 0-4 in one-score games. If you believe in math, usually that flips year over year. It's a law of averages thing. It comes back around. They're probably going to win some one-score games this year. They have a very good running back. Now, will they give him the football was the question last year, and the answer was largely no. They have a very good wide receiver. They have a talented defense. The problem, again, for me, is the quarterback is still Ashton Daniels, who had a turnover rate a turnover-worthy throw rate last year that was 101st in the country. I can't buy him, and I can't buy Norvell. I can't buy the schedule with those two things baked in. But the roster is better than it's been the last couple of years by a wide margin. So I can see your path bend to where they upset a couple of teams. The problem is they play all of them. They play Alabama in the non-con. They play SMU. They play at Louisville. They play at Miami back-to-back. They play Clemson after the bye week. They play Pitt, who are going to be up there somewhere. They play NC State, who are going to be competent again. The only gimme, and they've got Virginia, the only gimme they get in the ACC is Boston College, or the only team that they are clearly better than is Boston College. And Florida should be pretty decent in their non-con as well. There is nothing on this schedule that is free outside of New Mexico State, Central Arkansas, and probably Boston College at Chestnut Hill, but they lost at Stanford last year.
I agree. Let me ask you both this, though, about Mike Norvell. First 2 years bad, next 2 years sensational, next 2 years bad. What do you attribute those to, that 10-3 and 13-1? Mike Norvell won 23 games in 2 years just three seasons ago. How is it that he pulled that off and now he is on the hottest of seats? I mean, what has happened, do you think?
Well, I think you with Florida State, those 2 years, you had Jordan Travis, who was sensational, just to steal your word there quickly. But I actually went back and watched this 2023 Florida State Clemson game, and some of the NFL talent that that roster had, the one that, depending on who you ask, should have made the playoff. Jared Verse was on that team. Keon Coleman. There's a lot of talent. Running back, I think they were solid there as well. That was a pretty good, well-constructed team that just lost a sea of talent. And sort of by brand association, you figured you could tread water with DJ in the following season. And you just, I think a part of it is you've missed on the last two quarterback evaluations in the portal. Castellanos. Yeah. Was never going to work. DJ was a complete disaster. Was it Brock Glenn was the quarterback who played Clemson that year?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you had your best rosters as a head coach, and you had your best quarterback. That certainly is a factor there, and it just never has the portal mismatch for them, and trying to put it all together, and that aspect of roster building just hasn't really come together since they've lost him. And maybe if they make the playoff that year, regardless of whether they get absolutely waxed by a Michigan or an Alabama, maybe Norvell's looked at differently. I don't know.
You mentioned the overall talent. They still won the ACC championship. Yeah. Once Travis went down,
like,
granted,
16-3.
It was such a vile, no good, ugly, disgusting football game that the committee said we can't possibly subject anybody else to this. But Jordan Travis made it to the NFL. He was NFL quarterback on that team. It's unfortunate what happened to him after that. He got hurt. He never played. Trey Benson, running back, made it to the NFL. You go to the receiver room. Keon Coleman made it to the NFL. You go to Johnny Wilson, made it to the NFL. Now, he hasn't done anything in the NFL, but he made it to the NFL. The defense, the majority of these guys who made an impact. Jared Verse, great NFL player, instant NFL player. Braden Fisk, good NFL player, instant NFL player. Azariah Thomas in their secondary, made it to the NFL. Like, these guys are NFL players scattered all over the roster. They've had some of that the last couple of years, but more importantly, they didn't have any. It seemed like there was no culture 2 years ago when they brought everybody in via the portal, and they had the worst quarterback in the ACC on their team. DJ was maybe the worst quarterback in the entire ACC when they got him in there.
I was so confused in 24 when Florida State secured as many first place votes as they did
with him.
That is probably the more shocking first place finish, and you could kind of see where it was going to end up falling off for them. I think that 23 roster was a lot older, too. You sort of had the Indiana vibes where you picked up some players from the portal, but a lot of those players were homegrown and developed, like a Jordan Travis. I know he came in from the portal.
But he was there a few years.
Yeah, spent some time there. So you had the perfect storm of everything. It just is unfortunate for Seminole fans that the most devastating quarterback injury maybe of the playoff era, if we want to look at how punishing it was for them, where one player shifted the dynamic of how it all looked in the end of it. That defense was great too for winning that ACC championship, but they made the right decision in keeping them out. That was
they were unwatchably bad. Yeah. I mean, they were not better than Alabama that year without the quarterback. They deserved to be there. You're not going to get any argument from me there, but they would have gotten obliterated had they been in that game.
It was the classic deserving versus best.
Best, yeah. And that, they set a precedent, though, with that now. Yep. And now they have to, well, will they? I don't know. But they have to be consistent with that, or else you're going to hear it repeatedly from
Florida State fans. They never abide by it. They create arbitrary sets of rules every year. And
Sure.
It's defined as they go.
I want to ask you, because we were talking, and we're going to talk Clemson in this next segment as well, because I want to ask you a little bit, a few football-related questions here, and also one other thing. When you were filling out your ballot, and you were trying to figure out where the middle tier is, who's your sleeper in this conference this year?
Okay, so I had to pull up the picture on my phone of the finalized ballot, the one that everyone generally agrees on. The shockers for me were Virginia Tech at 8 is interesting to me. I had them at fifth or sixth, so I got to remember. Don't think they'll be in the upper echelon of the ACC. I think Miami is a clear separator. Then it's SMU and Louisville in their own category. I think Clemson is in this weird middle ground as well where they could contend, but they also could slide to 10 or 11, and it wouldn't shock me. But I think when we look at sleepers maybe in the conference, I think Cal's getting slept on. I know I don't mean to peddle back propaganda that you already put out there, but 12? I don't understand that. And then Wake Forest, too.
Spread the Calgarithm.
I think Wake Forest is definitely a sleeper team as well. I think they'll be much improved from last year.
12th for Cal.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
With the quarterback that they have.
And they finished the year. They had the big win at Louisville on the road.
Knocked SMU out.
And your quarterback is probably going to be one of the top picks in 2 years when it's all said and done. That kid's special. That wins you games.
You're speaking my language.
The wavelengths, man.
The Cal trip worries me not just from a travel perspective.
It's a good football team.
I think that's the focus that everybody puts on it for Clemson is it's a short week and a travel game. I'm more worried about the fact that that team is really going to be good, I think, on top of the travel trip. That creates another level of not fear, but I don't know what the outcome of that one's going to be because this isn't like traveling to Stanford or even last year's Cal team. I'm pretty convinced this one's going to be a lot better. So that was the one for me. Wake, I figured people would learn after last year with Wake, and I'm not all the way there with Faxon. Faxon.
Yeah, he's like a Gio Lopez truther.
Gio Lopez truther, number one client, Jake Dickert type
probably
thing.
Probably Gio is more of a product of the mess that North Carolina was last year, but I don't think he's in that upper tier of quarterbacks in the ACC. And then just one more note on Cal is you bring in a guy that has so much experience on the defensive side of the ball. Cal was atrocious on defense last year, especially in the ground game. And you sort of figure that quarterback's going to get better. You bring in a guy that can kind of be this perfect marriage on the other side of the ball, and the two will sort of meet in the middle. I think that results in maybe 8-9 wins. And this we're doing a schedule preview right now on TigerNet. And I've wrote, not to spoil it, but the game that should scare Clemson fans the most isn't LSU or Miami. It's that Cal game on Friday night.
You expect, realistically, to drop the LSU-Miami games. You don't want to drop Cal. Any path to 10, which we were talking about earlier, and even 9, requires most likely...
You got to be 3-2
Cal.
Before the bye.
You got to be 3-2 for a whole bunch of reasons, for confidence perspective as well, before that bye week. I got some Clemson stuff for you after the break. TigerNet Thursday with Grayson Mann, talking ACC football and a whole bevy of other things. Stick around on Out of Bounds. We'll be right back.
There's nothing like a Saturday in Death Valley. Howard's Rock, running down the hill, the roar of 80,000 fans. This season, there are more ways than ever to experience Clemson football. The Stacks bring easy tailgating just steps from the stadium. Savor upscale food and drink at the Champions tailgate. And introducing Paw Pass, the most affordable, flexible way to enjoy game day. This is where memories are made. Get your tickets today at clemsontigers.com/tickets.
To those in the upstate, I've got good news for you. There is a better option when it comes to blood work and lab testing for your health. Our friend of the program, Dr. Ted Swan, and his team have built a robust lab to compete with the national giants that do most of the testing for doctors and patients. There was a need for something better, so they built it. Timeliness matters, and Tiger Diagnostics focuses on getting your results back quickly, mostly in the same day. They are super friendly, they start early, and they even have an after-hours location to accommodate your schedule. A physician-led lab that puts patients first and is committed to our communities here in the upstate. If you don't want to wait for a doctor's order or you're interested in one of Tiger's signature health panels, you can just walk right in. They've kept prices low so that more people can access care. Let Tiger Diagnostics help you get healthy at one of their draw centers in Seneca, in Greenville, Anderson, or Piedmont. And you can learn more at TigerDiagnosticsLab.com. That is TigerDiagnosticsLab.com.
We call it like it is. Even if you don't like it, we are 105.5 and 97.5. The Roar.
Tiger fans, if you haven't been to Elkmont, you haven't been to Clemson. We at The Roar have been saying this for years because we believe it. At Elkmont, providing an outstanding shopping experience is Amy and Lee's passion. Nowhere else will you find all the brands you love under one roof. On Running, Birkenstock, Patagonia, Z-Supply, Poncho Shirts, Costa, Maui Gyms, Rainbow Sandals, Turtle Box Speakers, Filson, Extra Tough Rain Boots, and the list continues to grow recently by adding L.L. Bean to the Elkmont offering. L.L. Bean is an industry legend known for reasonably priced, quality performance clothing. At Elkmont, it's not just a tagline. There really is something for everyone. Elkmont wants to thank all the Roar listeners for your support through the last 30 years and hope you'll continue to visit Elkmont at the intersection of Highway 123 and 93 in Clemson or online at ElkmontTradingCompany.com. That's E-L-K-M-O-N-T TradingCompany.com. And go Tigers!
Planning your next getaway? We've got good...
He's Ben Milstead, and Grayson Mann is in studio with us for a relocated Tiger Net Thursday. We talked a little ACC in the last segment. We're going to talk some Clemson here in this one. Let me ask you about a couple of Clemson-related recruiting situations. 2027 safety, it's Seth Williams, is nearing a decision here. I believe it is the 31st. Tomorrow he'll be announcing. Where are we at on that one right now?
Yeah, that's one where it's still up in the air. And this is a kid that is... I think, and I don't mean this to knock on him, it's probably one of the more indecisive prospects, at least that I've covered, where he's pushed his commitment date back already. He had the decommitment, so there's a lot of factors where he truly wants to get the most out of this and has been narrowed in on Clemson and Georgia. There's not a surprise third school, to my knowledge. If I had to give it a slight lean, and I mean that ever so slightly, probably Georgia as of today, but this is one where... I think, we'll find out tomorrow night, but this is one of those commitments, and I always get this pushback when we have the string of commitments that they had this summer where they're not truly committed till they sign in December. I think he kind of fits into that category of, that's one you got to keep an eye on, just to see how things go based off the track record. I would say Georgia right now, but that could change like that. It has been so back and forth.
So not slam door shut even if...
No, I wouldn't close the door. I would... Maybe close it a crack, but...
Leave it a touch open?
Just okay. A touch open.
Trace Hawkins, four-star 2028 quarterback, is committing tonight. It has been reported that Clemson is the favorite here.
Yes.
Are you hearing the same?
Yep. Okay. I would be shocked if it isn't Clemson tonight.
That's good news. What can you tell me about Trace? What can you tell fans about the player there? Because obviously quarterback, you don't bring in a ton of them each year. There's a huge year-to-year emphasis on making sure you get one locked in early. Why him?
Yeah, so it came down to him and Trey Wright, the two quarterbacks that were offered from the auditions that are Dabo Swinney's football camp. And I think for Hawkins, the thing that this staff really likes is the word that I would use is poise, is there's a lot of control in the pocket, very timely on the throws, athletic as well, and still has 2 years left of high school football to continue to grow. You get the solid frame where last year you recruited Kyrim Hughley, who's a little bit smaller but stockier. This one, you got a little bit of a more traditional frame, I would say, with Hawkins there. So you got a little bit of everything. The buzzword that I keep hearing is the Russell Wilson comparison. I'd apply that more to Hughley than I would to Hawkins. I think he's a more athletic and more polished. I'm trying to find the right comparison that you'd throw in terms of, okay, he's this quarterback or he's that. But
player comps are impossible.
Yeah, it's tough to make, especially when competition's such a big factor. But it's a kid that won state championship as a freshman. He's a proven winner. He's accurate. He's mobile. He's got a little bit of everything. And this is really that first choice that Chad Morris is making where they came down to two quarterbacks they liked. Who's going to commit first? It sounds like Hawkins is going to be that guy tomorrow or tonight.
Do you find it interesting that 2 years in a row now with Hughley and Hawkins, if he commits, they've gone smaller at quarterback when the prototype seems to be nationally always trying to get bigger, stronger type thing?
I think it's a year-by-year basis, and sure. I think for Hughley, it's yeah, he's a little bit shorter, but he's really, like, he's a thick kid.
Stocky.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you're not worried about him getting beat up. Hawkins, I think in terms of a frame, he's certainly skinnier, but 6'1", 6'2", could grow into that, so I think it varies based off of scheme. I mean, Garrett Riley was such a big part of Hughley, and Reynolds, for that matter, for those commitments there. This is really that first Chad Morris one. So did they want to go maybe bigger? I don't think they discounted Trey Wright or anybody else because of maybe height. But certainly the difference is a little notable there.
Those are the two main recruits that I wanted to pick your brain on. Is there anything else before we shift gears back to preseason stuff that stands out in recruiting for Clemson here in these next couple of classes for you right now?
One class begins, another class ends essentially this weekend with Seth Williams' decision and then Hawkins' commitment tonight. I keep mixing the days up for some reason. But it's been a really electric summer for Clemson. They've done exactly what they've needed to do on the 27 side, and we'll see where everything falls for 2028. It's all about getting those visits set up, and they're trending well in the right direction for a few prospects, but it's very early. The class is just getting started.
Yesterday, and when they released the preseason poll, Clemson comes in fourth. About right. Where did you have them in your preseason prognostication?
I had them fourth.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I wanted to achieve this year at ACC kickoff is, due to the nature of where Clemson's at, the last three or four kickoffs you cover, Clemson's a shoo-in to be second or first on most ballots. And so this year I went around and asked, where did people have them? And the range that I got was anywhere from four to about seven. So there is a group of people that think Clemson will be much better than last year, and then there's a group of people that think Clemson will be 7-6 again, and sort of this is who they are now. So I think the opinions are very drastic. There's not one consensus after Charlotte. So I'm kind of in the former there of I think Clemson will be better, but I don't think they'll be in Charlotte competing for the ACC championship, but a step forward nonetheless.
How do you feel being in and around it and talking to these coaches and players the last couple of weeks, how do you feel the building is handling the complete difference in expectation from where they usually are, which is first or second in every preseason poll, regardless really of how the last season went in a lot of cases, to we think SMU's better than you. We think Jeff Brohm's Louisville team is better than you. We definitely think Miami's way better than you, and you're clearly in that second tier. How are they handling that difference in perception from everybody else?
Miami's sort of getting the Clemson treatment from last year, right? Where people would be shocked if Miami wasn't in the playoffs this year, and Darian Mensah should be this top pick in the draft. It's they're the shiny object of in the room. Yeah, I when you talk to some of these players, one of the additional goals into kickoff and the objectives that you want to get done on such a short window of time for that day is trying to peek further into the curtain of last year. And as much as we don't want to revisit that, it's important to contextualize why it went wrong so this year can go better. And one of the more honest answers that we got was from Sammy Brown, where he said that week in between Georgia Tech and Syracuse, program was a little spooked and didn't necessarily know how to handle starting 1-2 when they were the crown jewel of college football all summer. And that resulted in the result we got for Syracuse with the drubbing of Steve Angeli coming in and making things happen. So I think this year there's a little bit of a hunger. You've had this transfer portal class coming and bring a different amount of energy. So what the coaching staff has been saying about removing entitlement, it feels like a brand new chapter. I think the word rebuild is appropriate, and there's an excitement in the building to getting back on track to where Clemson needs to be versus the almost crushing pressure that this group faced last year with the national championship expectations looming over their heads.
Were you surprised that Bryant Wesco was listed as an all-ACC preseason teamer and not TJ Moore? And this is not Wesco discounting at all. I think he's incredibly talented. But I would have thought if you would have given me the choice between the two, which one ended up on that team, it would have been TJ Moore.
Yeah, and that's how my ballot went. I had TJ Moore in terms of the receivers you'd pick for the all-ACC team. I think I had him and Malachi Toney as the two options.
There's a lot of good receiver talent in this.
The ACC is pretty deep with receiver this year, so I was shocked that if there was going to be a Clemson receiver, I figured it'd be TJ Moore, more or less because we don't know what Wesco will look like post-injury, even though all indications are that he's back to normal. But Moore had an incredible end of last year, was a reliable option, complete receiver, NFL receiver in most circles. So, yeah, I was a little shocked, but maybe it's for the best for a guy that maybe needs a little more motivation. I don't know. Maybe that would be good for him.
Another chip on the shoulder for an already really good football player sure. is not necessarily a bad thing. And it's good for Wesco, I would imagine, to still, after a serious injury where you were worried a lot of the offseason, and we appear to have come out of this in a pretty good spot, luckily, it's indicative of how high the rest of the league is on the guy that they still put him at the top of
yeah.
a very, very talented crop of receivers to where it's probably difficult to find room for two or three guys, and they still have him in there. The other names on the list were not surprising. Sammy Brown and Will Helft are going to be on all of
sure.
these lists. Ashton Hampton is going to be on all of these lists. You listened to the basketball propaganda yesterday, and I want to get a question in about basketball here in the offseason. What have you been hearing in advance of this trip about recoveries, where guys are at mentally going into this, what is looking good on the court, where they still need room to improve? What was the vibe check going into this trip and coming, I guess, through it?
Yeah, I think if Brownell could turn off injuries like we do sometimes in 2K or the CFP game, I think he would. That's probably the biggest hurdle right now with a newer team is nobody's available that yeah. you really want them to be. So you're shouldering a lot of responsibility to a guy like Harris Reynolds, who I think is going to be pretty great. It's probably a good thing he's getting the kitchen sink thrown at him, but you want Zach Foster out there. You want Ace Buckner back out there, but the process has just been a little bit more grueling. And then you don't have a fully established front court yet. Dylan Faulkner is missing time. You obviously don't have Carter Welling. So you sort of bandaged this makeshift group together heading into Italy. And that'll be good for some of your depth pieces. It'll be good for the freshman guard, Harris Reynolds. Cole Sertov, it sounds like he had a great first game despite the sweat-laced court. It sounded like on the broadcast that it was dangerous out there for them.
Never heard of a game being canceled in the middle of it due to sweat
and I guess with
moisture.
An exhibition, it's not as important to finish, but
you gotta get out of there. Can't
that, well, I think it, based on what Kwaka described on the broadcast, that Dallas Thomas had basically slipped out, his legs just sort of slipped out from under him, and he had a pretty nasty fall, and Brownell from that point just went into coach mode, and they decided to call it.
I do have a baseball question as well. We're going around
athletic
department. Were you surprised Dayton Canott came back this week?
I was.
Was there any indication internally that was going to happen, or mm-hmm. did they think he was out of there?
This has been brewing for weeks, and no pun intended on the team that he was going to sign with, but this was something that had been being mended behind the scenes, and so there were rumblings for sure. And with the MLB placement, with him going to the fifth round, I figured that's easily gone. And the situation up there in Milwaukee,
especially
fantastic.
After what last year looked like from a regression standpoint.
Maybe the 5-for-5 has something to do with that, where now he can play two extra years and make some good money before testing the MLB waters once again. Maybe there's internal confidence if he can add another pitch. He could be drafted a little bit higher. There's so many factors to this, but in all accounts, it's great news for Clemson if you can get Canock back to form, and this junior year of his is just sort of an aberration of what his true talent actually is.
Agreed. I think I don't see how you can view it as anything but a good thing, especially with they didn't hit the portal hard for rotation.
Yeah.
And
you need an extra arm.
I do believe this is probably a big reason why.
Yeah.
And they had the sense that this might happen. I was still stunned that he didn't end up going to Milwaukee just because of who drafted him and the development track there. But
it was the Rockies. It's like, okay,
yeah,
they're coming back.
If the Angels draft you, you might as well take the check and,
sure.
and get about it, get back on campus and avoid that situation. But with Milwaukee, it's a coup. It's a coup for Clemson to get him back. Grayson, appreciate you coming on as always today. Where can we check out your stuff? What do you guys have brewing at TigerNet? You're getting close.
We're 1 week out from fall camp starting. That's really exciting to hear myself say out loud after we've been in the studio off-season chatting for months and months and months. But
many months.
Certainly, TigerNet.com is the place to be. Dave and I will be rolling out weekly podcasts now that football season is back over on our YouTube page for sure. And then obviously if you want to check out my stuff on Twitter, @gray_man21. You might see a little AJ Brown propaganda. I heard he had a good day after some overreaction from a certain fan base.
I heard he was already complaining about not getting the ball in practice.
That was a joke. That was a joke.
Do you ever know with A.J. Brown?
No, but he was laughing, so I'm going to take his word for it.
I don't know if I can go that far. We are 1 week out of camp. What are you most looking forward to next week?
Just having
football back?
Is there
a storyline that really stands out to you with this team right now?
I think the quarterback battle obviously stands at the top, but if you have to exclude that, I'm really interested with the running back situation. How many touches is Davidson getting? Is someone like Jay Haynes going to finally emerge? After I really felt like he was on the come up in 2024, but the injuries sort of hampered that for sure. So there's a lot of individual battles that you'll be watching for defensive line, especially within the tackles. How is that going to work with a couple of added transfers there? I'm just ready for football to be back, man. It's just exciting.
I need it. Spot the ball. You and I will start high school football on August 21st.
Can't wait.
It'll be you and I, and it's going to be fun this year.
The most serious of broadcasts.
It'll be, it's going to be deeply unserious. I cannot believe they keep giving us headsets. It'll be you, me, and Ramona, and we will have a delightful time.
Maybe the Red Sox and the Guardians will make the playoffs again on a broadcast. That was pretty fun.
Do not bring up my baseball team. You know what? One last thing. I have to mention it. Took 2 out of 3 from Quawk's Reds. We won the Ohio Cup.
There you
go. Suck it, Quawk. Suck it.
What's suck it in Italian?
I don't know. Gorlami. We're going to go to quick break. Hour number 3 concludes right after this.
If you're online, you've got the Roar at your fingertips. From a beach in Bali to the Rocky Mountains, you don't have to miss a minute. You can catch your favorite show streaming live on the Roar app or at theroarfm.com at any time. With 13 straight hours of local programming, we've got you covered all day long right here on The Roar, where every day is game day.
If you're juggling multiple credit card balances and feeling overwhelmed, high interest can...
is Ben Milstead.
Enjoyed that with Grayson. Always like to hear Grayson in on the show with you and Faxon.
He is... Tiger Net Thursday is one of my favorites. I'm excited to do high school football with him. It'll be him... and Ashby as well. Ashby will be on half the games. Grayson will be on the other half. We like to rotate that spot every year, and it's been a lot of fun. And I always enjoy. We're going to get an extra recruiting element to it as well this year because Grayson will be doing a lot of work for TigerNet while we do that. So we'll keep you guys up to date on all the Clemson recruits that may or may not be in and around. I remember we had Trey Wimbley last year before he committed, and I realized very quickly how good at football that guy was. So plenty of fun stuff coming down the pipe with high school football and college and everything. And Grayson and David and everybody at TigerNet are where you're going to want to go for all of your news and notes, and especially with the recruiting news and notes with Seth Williams and Hawkins here in the next couple of days. This segment here sponsored by One Tom Plumber. They've got locations in Greenville, Anderson, and Charleston. They're founded and operated by Clemson grads. They've got 24/7 emergency plumbing and drain cleaning. You don't want to deal with this, I promise. This is not something that you want to mess with. One Tom Plumber will come in and make sure they cover all of your needs. Same-day service is always available for emergencies like sewage backups or no hot water. They're licensed, insured, and background checked, and they offer honest, upfront, flat-rate pricing so you won't get ripped off because the price is the price. 5-star ratings on Google all over the place, and there's a giant pink plunger logo on every single van, so if you see them once on the road, you're going to see them all over the place. One Tom Plumber. 864-654-ROAR is the number if you want to get in before the buzzer here on the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone lines or Adams & Co. Roofing text line. And that's exactly what Scott in Greenville is going to do. Scott, how you doing today, my friend?
Hey, man. I've been better. I'll tell you about that in just a second. But I wanted to just let Ben's mind rest at ease and all the Braves fans out there. Connor Thomas was picked up off waivers by the A's, whatever they are now, Oakland, Las Vegas, whatever they want to be. But he is no longer part of our franchise, so we don't have to give up any more 11-run innings. I shared some information this morning, some personal information on Mickey's show. My wife went in for triple bypass this morning. Unexpected. We went in for what was thought was to be just a medication issue, and they sent her straight in for a heart cath and 99% blockage in 3 of her main arteries. She's lucky to be alive. But she has come out of that surgery. I got to see her for about 10 minutes, and she is doing fantastic. And the good Lord has took care of her. And some of the listeners today have reached out, and I'm thankful for them. And I just wanted to give an update real quick on where she stood. We got a long road. I say long. It's not as long as you'd think it would be, but it's about 3 months of hard recovery. And she's still, they only let me see her 10 minutes today, and I get to see her 10 minutes tonight, and that'll ease up as we go. But it's been a tough week for our family. But the listeners on the Roar, the faithfulness of the station, the faith of the station is what led me to call and share that news, and I appreciate every bit of it. I've been listening to you. I listened to Mickey this morning. I had a five-hour surgery to sit through the station today and listen to. So y'all kept me going, and I appreciate it so much. I just wanted to tell y'all thank you.
Scott,
that is – man, I'm thanking Jesus for that, number one, because, yep. I mean, that is the best possible outcome to a bad situation. And to catch it the way that you did – instead of it happening at home or in a restaurant,
we were rejected from the ER twice with blood pressures almost pushing 200. That's a story, and it'll be dealt with in itself.
Yeah.
But we got referred to a cardiologist. They canceled our appointment on Monday for a doctor emergency. They wanted to push us to the 18th of August. And had we not fought for an appointment on Tuesday morning, then the doctor told us this yesterday when we were doing the consultation. He said, if you had waited to that October 18th appointment rather than planning recovery, you'd be planning the funeral. And I'm just thankful. I don't think, and the doctor told us this morning, he said, God did not get you into this hospital with 99% blockage in three arteries, and one of those was the Widowmaker.
Oh, man.
Did not get you into this office to have this surgery and not see you through it. If he wanted you, he would have took you with the Widowmaker. And you still got work to do. And so that perked my wife up a little bit. But, you know, I joked with the doctor, but before the surgery, I said, listen, I need to know something. I need to know how your grades were in school, brother. And, you know, did you pass? Because, you know, somebody gets out of there squeaking by. And he said, well, just think about it this way. 50% of the class is in the bottom 50% of the class. So I'm not one of those. I said, well, thank you, Lord. But doctor, they don't advertise on your station, but I'm praising God for Upstate Cardiology and Dr. Smith. He saved my wife's life.
Without a doubt. Scott, that's great news. And you're she doesn't feel great right now, I know. But you know how much better your wife's going to feel when she comes home? After 99% blockage, I mean, man, she's going to have energy and feel better that she didn't realize she didn't feel good until she gets home.
We don't know. And so I say that it is hereditary. My father-in-law had it at 55, and it didn't wake us up. We just kept on living life, and here we are. She's 54 with the same procedure that he had. And so my kids were drilled yesterday about going and getting checked, because if you can find out at 30 instead of 54, you got a much better situation. So if you're listening and you have any doubts, go get checked. Go get checked. And it paid dividends in our world today. And I mean, we've been turned upside down. It's like a dream, man. It's like an outer body experience that we're going through. And it's been a road. But I just wanted to thank y'all, because y'all kept it going. And I've had my AirPods in the lobby for 3 days.
Well, hopefully we took your mind off of that for just a little bit, Scott.
You did, bro.
Keep us updated. And your wife, what's your wife's first name, Scott?
It's Michelle.
Michelle being my prayer, Scott.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Just want to share that with y'all today, and y'all have a good day, and take care.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for the phone call. We love you.
Man,
you know that.
A million texts. A million texts coming in.
You are, Scott, you are one of my favorite phone calls. Always have been. My thoughts are to you and a happy recovery here. It sounds like this is one where this is the best case that could have come out of this.
A lot of our listeners are family. Scott's more like immediate family. Yeah. You know, Scott's been around Long time with us, so.
Scott's the first phone call I ever took on Mickey's show. I don't know why I remember that, but he was. So we love you, Scott. All of our texters have gotten in, and same sentiments there. So we're going to keep you and Michelle in our thoughts, and you're going to come out the other side. And like Ben said, she's going to feel a whole lot better without even realizing she ever even needed to feel better. I think we've all, with the heart and family members, been in this situation, and not to this level maybe for many, but it is. I know my family has it. My grandfather had a very similar situation happen. It's a terrifying place to be, and you just got to hope they make it out the other end. It sounds like in this situation, it went about as well as it could. So, Scott, we're thinking of you, my friend.
Very similar situation with a friend of mine, except it was him, not her. And his 3 months later, his wife said, I can't deal with him anymore. Like, he thinks he's 30 again.
And all we can hope for here is that's going to be the exact same thing that comes out of this for you guys. So, appreciate you keeping us updated, Scott. Keep us updated here in the next few weeks and days and through the recovery and how all of that goes. And keep calling in. If we can be an escape of any kind for y'all in any way, that's what we're here for. And that's what we'd love to do. Benny, you know, we were going around the horn here in this segment. He brought up the Braves. We'll close with some Braves stuff here before we get up out of here. Where is your head at 3 or 4 days before the trade deadline on aggression, where you need to be, how aggressive you think the front office is going to be with a division lead but multiple needs across the roster?
I think they're going to be aggressive with a starting pitcher. I think they are. We'll see. Offensively, I'm worried right now. I do think some of that is going to be self-correcting as Acuna gets back up to speed. He clearly is not yet. But my concern, and I've expressed this a couple of times, I said this maybe last week, I worry about this team offensively because they are so dependent on the home run. And they're struggling to manufacture runs. And again, Acuna can help with some of that. You should have more guys on base, but you lose 2 out of 3. I mean, thankfully you get the nightcap last night with the Mets. And the Mets have owned Atlanta this year. I don't get it.
It's the only team they can beat consistently.
The Mets look like what they should have looked like all year when they play Atlanta. I just you worry about a team that is home run dependent because those things seem to come in waves, and which then means you're a streaky team offensively.
I have seen it from Braves fans that are both rational and completely irrational. Let's say they aren't overly aggressive. Let's say this ends in a bullpen arm maybe added and a back end of the rotation guy, which they do probably need. And they don't really address the lineup too much, or they bring in a very low-level rotational lineup piece, and they flame out in round one. Is that enough of Anthopoulos for you, or are you sticking it out with him after another relatively untouched deadline in that case? How much of this is on him if it flames out again in the first round this year?
Well, I do think his hands are tied also, though.
Agreed. Injuries.
I mean, he doesn't have a blank check. And to be honest, the Braves are spending more money than I thought that they were going to spend to begin with. So, generally speaking, I think he's a very good GM. I think he makes good decisions. And I would argue he has made more good decisions than bad. I mean, things seem to work out more times than not. He's a hard guy to judge because you don't know the other side of this, what it is he has to work with.
Agreed. And his good decisions led to a World Series. So.